Basically, the activity is you take identical unit size squares and you pack them into a larger square. More specifically, the question is, what is the smallest size that the large square can be to fit a certain number of small squares into it with no overlaps? Now, in this particular kind that I use, tilting is allowed. And I'd like to show you some examples of that. Those of you that aren't familiar with square packing, on the left you see two versions of packing five unit-sized squares into a larger square, and the numbers there indicate the size of the large square so that you can see that the best packing there is the first one. And then you have the best packing of 10. Then you have two packings of 11. And the last one there, even though it's enlarged, and I apologize for that, is in fact the best one. I, however, don't know the size of that side, but it would be smaller than 3.914. Then there's a second kind of square packing, which is maybe even more interesting, where you use irregular squares with sides of 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. The question there is, I mean, one way of phrasing the question, can a large square be cut into such a system of small irregular squares with no leftover space? So the sort of longhand way of finding the answer is to take one square and you add it to two squared, and you add that to three squared, and you add that to four squared, etc. If you continue, you get to 24 squared equals a sum of 4,900, which is, for the first time, 70 squared. Then the question is it possible to pack all 24 different squares into the 70 by 70 square? The answer is no. And then the question is, what's the best you can do? And the answer is, you can in fact pack 23 of them. And interestingly enough, there are 24 different versions of packing 23. And also interesting, the 7 by 7 square is always the one left out. And I'll show you an example of that. the 7 by 7 square over there is the one that can't fit. It's 24, actually 23 different sized squares there. That's the best that you can do, as far as we know. Now, obviously, we also use abstract, sort of pre-compositional manipulation of materials. For example, in the collaboration that we did with John Cage and Toru Takemitsu, the opening pitch material we used used multi-order function sets, the kind that Robert Morris and Bud Lown have made famous. And yes, I have used the Babbitt-Malulu Maximally Scrambled Leapfrog set. However, I don't think very successfully yet. And we've considered order sets from the Alan Fort Bips point of view, which I kind of like. Now, we all know many composers that do that sort of thing, but some of people may surprise you, I found out. For example, Mo Cohn, Jake Palika, and I think, well, I'm not sure, Gus Joost uses this. And one of the surprises may be that I personally know three East Coast composers who use square packing, and they are Buzz Pafko, Hobie Kuzawa, and Irv Drott. And I think basically people use them as like counterpoint exercises. As a matter of fact, I've even used them for designing our brochures. Now I'd like to show you a piece that came directly from our my work with square packing. This is a piece that was composed in Miles Davis has said, I don't like furniture, and I don't like corners, and neither do you. What I'd like to talk about tonight is how I've used Schenker analysis, both with respect to pre-composition and plan, and as a structure for improvisation. I realize that's sort of a reverse kind of Schenker. But it's not uncommon, to tell you the truth. It's usually referred to as Revy Schenker. And what I usually do is to start with the goals of the motion and determine the kinds of motion between the goals. So obviously I'm not talking about just sound goals, but movement sorts of goals, linguistic goals. And when I collaborated with Anthony Braxton a couple of years ago, I varied the approach. So I set up a complex complex system of simultaneous periodicities, a la Jesse Sawatsky, Virgil Chidi and Bib Groth, especially those. And then the structure sort of grows using biological and, I suppose, sociological analogs where you celebrate relationships between the parts, kind of the way Ernie Mapes has. I also use Leonard Meyer expectancy type games and phrasing games that have been inspired by Ida Roth and Alexander, the Alexander Method, for example. I don't know his first name. Now, obviously, we all phrase all of the time, whether we're conscious of it or not, and you do it well or you don't. Or as a writer, Hack Neely, has said, we transform the world by appreciating it and by artistically rendering objects in it. You manifest your own form and everything is transformed. As an example, what I'd like to do is to, this is a real simple example, play you, is to do an improv. If this is the simplest type of improv that we could do, where I just set up a periodic note, let's say A, and then I improvise around the A, and hopefully the A kind of stays where it is. So to do this, I have a tape little accompaniment. So could we have that tape, please?
Thank you. sponsor gives instructions to performers and how to do that.
As everyone knows, it's via a notation. The notation must be properly understood. It's nonverbal. It's a shorthand code, which must be believed to be correct. Until we find out otherwise, we have to believe it's correct, even though it might not be.
Yeah.
And it's a situation where we're almost literally interpreting the notation.
Yeah, I see. Well, what's the goal of that?
The goal in a reading situation, unlike the improvisation, is that we want to duplicate them.
Right.
And we want to be able to do that without hearing it first, without rehearsing it first, without any kind of helps of any kind.
I see.
And it's interesting, Philip, that the uniquely rhythmic questions we're talking about here are only three. They are when you
yeah.
Might say which one. How long and how fast or how many wife or what are we talking about this location?
when it comes to talking and thinking about what I do, I monitor myself by something that was devised by Alfred Korzybski called the structural differential, or as he sometimes called it, the anthropometer. As a matter of fact, let me show it to you. Very pretty device. Yeah, I don't have time to go into very much detail, but let me tell you what the letters stand for. E stands for event. The holes simply refer to characteristics of the event. The parabola with the broken line at the top just indicates an infinite number of characteristics. There's an O. O stands for object, finite size, but with a large finite number of holes or characteristics, which of course is the first abstraction of the nervous system. L just refers to label. So this is a system of abstraction. Label given to an object, and they have characteristics too, the labels. And the A, the A is referred to strings that are connected. And that just indicates the process of abstracting. One of the more interesting ones are the hanging loose strings, the Bs, B1 and B2. And they indicate the characteristics that have been left out, that you failed to abstract. And you notice there are two kinds of O's. There's object H is human. And the other you can't read too well is object A, which is animal. And if you notice, significantly, there are no labels under the animal. So as you go down, L1, L2, L3, you get progressively more abstract. And if you notice, the L then goes back and hung on the original E. That just indicates that that's the highest abstraction to date. Now, why the device is important is an interesting question. So let me read you a couple of quotes. Majority of human difficulties are due to a fatal structural error resulting in false evaluation due to identification or lack of differentiation. That's a quote from Johnny Kazak. And there's another one. The objective level is not words. It cannot be reached by words alone. We must point our finger and be silent, or we shall never reach this level. Our personal feelings are also not words and belong to the objective level. That's writer Gil Zernial. Now, this has led me to use of, as you can imagine, certain hidden codes. And I understand for aware of the fact that they're not particularly significant, but they are sort of fun, so I'll just mention a few. I have used, I suppose kind of a stupid way, Morse code and Braille, and one of my favorites is Ardois. And the way I've used them is you just add stems and flags on them, and they become music notation. Then they indicate relative duration looks much like conventional notation and register and that sort of thing. I also use codes on stage for things like cueing the tape operator, the kinds of codes that would be hidden from an audience. And for this, I use something called Reynolds code. Now, Reynolds code is a turn of the century Navy semaphore, which was used to communicate originally numerals. And just to give you an idea of how that would work, a numeral can stand for anything, but if you wanted to communicate the numeral 1, you would do this. That's 1. And then, for example, this would be 7. And 9 is this. And of course, I can refer to anything, but I use that for a lot of cueing. And if you're careful with it, it can be unobtrusive. Here's an interesting aside. As a matter of fact, regarding this, recently I was on the way to doing a performance in Northern California, and I stopped at a Burger King to eat. And I went to the restroom, at least that was my goal. And the first door I came to, in place of the label, had a stick figure version of Reynolds Code. And I was expecting to say men or women or something. But I didn't know what it meant, because it just stands for numeral. So I went to the next door, and it had exactly the same Reynolds Code stick figure. So I had no idea which door to use. And so I spent a lot of time looking at them, and I finally did, a very close inspection, I did notice there was a slight imperfection, and this is the sort of thing they do on one of the signs indicating it was a men's room. Another kind of hidden code that we have used on stage, sorts of things that are hidden from the audience. I don't know how to tell you this, but I spent about 2.5 years studying ventriloquism in Los Angeles, and to use it as a hidden code on stage. And, hi. How are you? Well, but they all say that I look great. And you, how you doing? I hear you had a little, sickness. Yeah, I did a little. Now things are really going good. Hi, Philip Larson. How are you? I'm pretty good. How are you, then? Things have been going pretty good for me. How are you? Not too bad. Hi. How are you? I hate your yard. You do? So what? Who cares? Hi, Philip. How you been? Pretty good. One of my best friends just had an operation. I'll now say the word bulb. Hi, Philip. How are you? Or, as Ed London has written, Yamanaka wa hitobito de ippai de aru.
The world is so full of people.
Mainichi, sono nannin kanya.
You meet some every day.
Karele wa koibito sagashiteru.
Who are looking for a lover.
Koibito toshite issho ni itai hito.
With whom they want to stay.
Soshite monogoto ga.
And just when the thing is cooking, and life's like new mown hay, a little doubt comes creeping out. Till one of them will say,
Kimi dake ga boku wo wakuwaku saseteku reru.
Only you turn me on anymore. Exhaling is unnecessary. Fingers are unnecessary. Vowels are unnecessary. Mutes are unnecessary. Trumpet bell is unnecessary.
Come along.
Right.
Says no charge, a gift from Vern Shaler. A gift, well, it's mighty generous. I don't know what the rest of you are gonna do, but Ned and me are gonna pay our fair share. Ben, you'll see that she gets it. I'll see that she. See you, man. Yeah.
Coming along?
Right.
Ben, we're all loaded up. How much do we owe?
Ada says, no charge. A gift from Vern Shaler.
A gift?
Well, that's mighty generous.
I don't know what the rest of you are going to do, but Ned and me are going to pay our fair share.
Ben, you'll see that she gets it.
I'll see that she gets it. Thanks, fellas. Thanks.
See you, Ben.
Yeah.
Sure.
show. Fool.
Ni show.
No, I call me. Show.
No, I told you. Show.
Oh, shit. how long? And thirdly, how fast? Or how many wide per X?
Thank you. Sheriff, could you come to the front desk, please?
That's very true. Yes, I would be glad to do that. Yes, I would be glad to do that. It's the cosmos, you see, the cosmos. Plantain. It seems to be maintaining its balance that way. Plantains. Yes, yes, political science. Oh, yes. Did you see that picture? Did you see that picture? It's not so much shaped more like a football. Oh, I see, I see. Economics, very interesting. There's a fine voice, I wonder if you know that. He's a wonderful guitarist, you know. Yes, of course we could trace that back, yes. Oh, yes, 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 of course we could trace that back, yes. You see the connections with the subject at hand, as well as just any place. Yes. Oh, yes, yes. In general, more in general than specifically, I would say.